And welcome back to the Conservative Voice here on WWDB 860 AM. I'm Don Beuschel Jr. here along with my good friend and co-host Gary Heasley. And we're going to be joined on this segment of the show by my good friend from the Family Research Council, Pastor Tim Throckmorton. And we're going to be talking about the meaning of Christmas. But before we bring Tim on, I'm going to have my good friend Linus from the Charlie Brown Show tell you what the meaning of Christmas is.
I guess I really don't know what Christmas is all about. Isn't there anyone who knows what Christmas is all about?
Sure, Charlie Brown, I can tell you what Christmas is all about. Lights, please.
And there were in the same country shepherds, abiding in the field, keeping watch over their flock by night, and lo, the angel of the Lord came upon them. And the glory of the Lord shone round about them, and they were sore afraid. And the angel said unto them, Fear not, for behold, I bring you tidings of great joy, which shall be to all people. For unto you is born this day in the city of David a Savior, which is Christ the Lord. And this shall be a sign unto you. Ye shall find the babe wrapped in swaddling clothes, lying in a manger. And suddenly there was with the angel a multitude of the heavenly host praising God, and saying, Glory to God in the highest, and on earth peace, goodwill toward men. That's what Christmas is all about, Charlie Brown.
And I think that pretty much sums it up. So, Tim, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Dawn, and good to be with you. Do I have to follow Linus? this is difficult. I want you to know that.
Well, I think that, and we are joined by my co-host, all Gary Heasley. Gary's on the phone. Gary, if you want to say hi to Tim.
Hello, Tim. Merry Christmas.
Hello. Merry Christmas to you, Gary. Good to be with you today.
One of the things that, Tim, as I obviously, you know, you've been a guest on our Christmas show many times, but I always like to have you come on because you have a unique ability to really bring home to people, you know, what the meaning of Christmas is. And as a country, we seem to be losing that, but I think we're getting it back. I mean, that's maybe I'm a half glass full kind of guy, but I think that all our hard work and being willing to say Merry Christmas after all these years of the being drummed into the Happy Holidays stuff, I think it's starting to pay off. I don't know. What do you think?
Sure, I do as well. And, you know, it's in us all. There is created in us this need for that connection. You know, it starts at a young age. A child reaches for a mother's embrace. A toddler reaches for a toy or a bottle, and a bright-eyed grandchild reaches for the able arms of a loving grandparent. And life is about reaching, and it doesn't stop. We reach for success academically in school. We reach for acceptance and friends and peers. We reach for direction as we begin our adult lives, whether through higher education or the beginning of a career. And then we reach for happiness and contentment through our life, marriage, everything that we do. Mankind, I think, has been reaching for centuries for things just out of our grasp, but in our minds, goal worthy to be pursued. And when we finally often get our hands on what we think we need, it doesn't satisfy. And that's kind of how man's journey away from God began, listening to lies and distortions. Fake news isn't new. It began in Genesis chapter 3, and it's been going on ever since. But God has been reaching in our direction as well. I think it's why this season of the year is so special. He's seen the world reaching for something, and Christmas, you know, Christmas is, that's what it's about. Isaiah said, for unto us a child is born, unto us a son is given. The Apostle Paul said, when the fullness of time was come, God sent forth his son, made of a woman, made under the law to redeem them that are under the law, that we might receive the adoption of sons. Christmas is about God himself reaching down to us. And I think if we miss that, we miss the reason for the season.
Well, you know, Tim, one of the things that we talked about in the previous hour with both of our guests and was that Christmas is a time traditionally where people came together, no matter what their political beliefs were, what their religious beliefs were, whether you were Christian or Jewish or whatever. You know, it was okay to say Merry Christmas, you know, to somebody of the Jewish persuasion. It was okay for a Jewish person to say Merry Christmas to a Christian. And one of the things that I said was that the reason that I believe that that Christmas is under attack is because the way that Satan or the devil or whatever you want to call it, or in my case, you know, from a political standpoint, the left, they attack that institution because it divides us. And when we're divided as a people, it makes us more easily to be defeated and separated. And so I believe that that's why there was this war on Christmas. And we, in turn, stood strong in the breach. And now I think we're closing that breach. And that's just how I saw it.
Well, the war on Christmas, from the perspective of the enemy of God, if you will, was not just about Christmas, about removing God.
Right.
It's about taking God away. Because if you remove that, then all you have to hope for is what is under the sun, what you can see with your eyes. But our hope goes beyond that to something we cannot see. And if our hope is only in what we can see, Paul said, "We're of all men most miserable. For we hope for that which we see not, and with patience we wait for it." And what Christmas sparks in us, I believe, is what mankind has always hoped for came to us. And the door was cracked open to something we could see and hope in a very, very real way. Because God came to man for a purpose and to redeem mankind. You take that out of the mix, you take away all hope. And that's really what removing God does. That's what, you know, socialism, communism does, and other ideologies. But the good news is they can try, and they've tried for thousands of years. You can try to take it away. You can try to drive it down and beat it down and push it away and destroy it. But this hope remains alive, and we're reminded of that each and every Christmas.
And I think that's the the essence of what the Christmas season is that it's almost like it is the birth of Christ, but every year that hope is reborn at Christmas time. That's the way I've always felt about it, that there was something about the Christmas season that all year long you get beat down, you get beat down, you get beat down, but then the Christmas season comes and there's a fire that's relit inside of you. And I believe that's our Lord doing that.
Yeah, Advent. Advent teaches us to wait and points us towards something that we're to expect. Years ago, there was a song written by Suzanne Jennings, Michael Sykes, and Guy Penrod entitled "The Hand of Sweet Release." And in the chorus, it says, I love this, "There's an end to all the waiting. There's an answer to the who and where and why. Tonight, all the years of anticipating are surrendered to a tiny baby cry. There's a dawn to follow darkness. There's a face to hold the title Prince of Peace. What he promised, he delivered. I'm saved by the hand of sweet release." And I love those lines. They point us to why Jesus came, not just to be a baby in a manger, but to be the redeemer of mankind. And that's the hope that I think, Don, you're right. It's reignited every year, and we look at it in the symbology of the gifts that we give, because God gave His Son, the greatest gift that the world has ever known.
And I think that in itself is the message that, you know, God gave us the greatest gift that He could possibly give to somebody, and. Those of us that choose to accept that gift are indeed blessed. So I want to shift gears just a tiny bit. And I'm going to bring Gary in on this because he was involved heavily in this. You're out in Ohio. You guys had a big fight going on that in the previous election cycle. And I want to talk about that because I think it was important for us to realize what was going on in Ohio. Tim, why don't you talk about that, and then I'll let Gary jump in because he was out there when that was going on as well. And let's dig into that just a tiny bit here.
I think you're referring to issues 1 and 2.
Yes.
That legalized abortion up until birth, removed key parental rights. And issue 2 also legalized recreational marijuana. I think one of the things that in our post-game analysis that we understood going in but really saw it come to fruition in the outcome of the election was, you know, we have a culture today that's void in Ohio, no matter where it's Ohio or Pennsylvania, wherever, that's void of biblical understanding and historical understanding and civic understanding. And so though we worked hard, we were outspent. I mean, I think they had close to $30 million that they used in airways and in every way media. But on the ground, they had people for the last year here in Ohio talking about these issues on the ground. And if you don't know, for example, if you don't know what's true, then you're susceptible to believe something that's not true. And when you looked at the law or looked at the proposed amendment to the Constitution, you saw clearly what it could do. But if all you know is what you heard in these ads and what most people fed on, then you respond in a different way. And I think what I'm getting to is our call is to make disciples from the scriptures, not to build churches, not even to save states and countries. It's to make disciples. And if we don't make disciples, we're not making people with biblical understanding. And we are inundated in our culture. Only 6% of adults in America have a biblical worldview. Only 6%, according to George Barna. Of those who attend church regularly, it's 19%. Of millennials, it's 4%. So that's, you know, we got to keep doing all we're doing. However, you know, we're dealing with a population that is woefully lacking biblical truth and even believing an absolute truth. So that's some of the post-event analysis that we have come to see. We knew going in, but still, there's deep, long work to do. It's not just about election cycles,
right? So, Gary, you were involved in out in that also. So, how did you see it?
Well, I think one of the greatest challenges we face is fully recognizing and understanding the creativity, the resources, and the dedication of the enemy. And when I say the enemy, of course, I mean the enemy that we talked about at the beginning of the show, the enemy to the nation, our culture, Western civilization as a whole, the forces that are trying to bring it down. That's why we have riots in Ireland, as Doug Mastriano mentioned in the first hour. So the enemy is incredibly powerful, and they fight to win, not just to... They don't fight by any rules. They don't accept any of the rules that the rest of us live by. So with something like issue one, they were, and this was genius, I suppose, they were running ads that said that issue one, this is the issue that was to make abortion legal up to the moment of birth. And as you said very clearly, remove parental rights. So children could go get abortions without having to have consent from parents. And if you read it the way I read it, I think issue one now is a constitutional amendment because it passed with a very wide margin of support. I think it will eventually be interpreted to mean other things related to what will be called sexual health or gender identity. And I think they will use it to begin transitioning children without parental guidance, without parental approval, or even maybe parental knowledge. But you know, that remains to be seen, but I see it coming. The enemy gets involved in this long before, as you said, they campaigned long and hard. They invested huge sums of money. They spent 35. They could have spent 50 if they needed it. They have that money at their fingertips. On the other hand, the side fighting to protect the nation you know, to prevent children from having the ability to go get abortions without a parental permission, without parental involvement in any way, they typically we start late. In other words, the enemy might be campaigning for 2 years. We'll start 6 weeks before election. We are not in the market all the time, and we're very afraid to really go after an issue like abortion. If you look at the impact that they had with abortion after the May 2nd, 2022 release from the Supreme Court, it wasn't a leak, it was released, it was intentional, there's been no repercussions, it was planned, and it was released on purpose. And from the moment they issued that press release saying that this was on the docket, from that moment, when abortion was ranking in the minds of voters as a low priority issue, you know, crime, drugs, inflation were at the very top of the list. From that moment, right up to Election Day, they drove abortion from a non-issue to a matter of urgency that caused people to shift their votes away from what they believed in into voting things that they literally didn't believe in and didn't understand. But to your point, we're driven by the ads. So then it comes up in Ohio from November 22. It turns into Ohio for the August vote as to whether or not to change the way constitutional amendments are approved. That is defeated easily. And then they get into the vote on issue one, and they win by a wide margin. So what you've got is a creative enemy that's dedicated. They're dedicated every day. If you look at what happened after the election day in November of 22, the next day, the DNC sent out tweets and texts saying, join this conference call to find out how you could participate in the 2023 election cycle. They start their campaigning the day after Election Day. Republicans and conservatives and pro-life folks and constitutionalists, they don't get in the market until just weeks before an election. And by that time, they've already lost. So if you consider someone who can actually execute a press release that is theoretically illegal from the Supreme Court and use all of corporate media to drive their message up to an election day to convince people to vote against what they believe in, and you compare that to folks who get in the market with underfunded media, underfunded campaigns, come in late and campaign for short periods of time, it's really a difficult battlefield. And that's exactly what happened with issue one. It happened with issue two. I've spoken with multiple voters who voted yes on issue one, voted to make abortion a constitutional right in Ohio, who have no idea what they were voting for and actually believe they were voting for something quite different. And when they understand what issue one includes, would say, well, I would never vote for that. But they never heard a competing message. So my last point is, I think that on this issue of abortion, there are two paths here. One is just continue to lose elections standing on this principle, right? And the other is to actually engage in the battle 24 months, or 12 months a year, 24 hours a day, everywhere, and be shameless in the fight. In other words, no more indirect, soft, ineffective language. Be as effective in the marketing of the opposing view as the enemy is in marketing their view, the only view that's marketed today.
Well,
that's kind of my thought.
Well, you know, Gary, it's a good point. And Tim, obviously you don't know this, but one of the things that we started doing on this show is I don't use the term abortion anymore. I call it state-sanctioned murder of children. And because I'm tired of us couching what we need to say, but the left or the anti-life folks, they have no qualms about saying what they want to say. And so my good friend Stephanie Barr, which I'm sure you know Stephanie, she's a staunch supporter of life. Yeah. Here in Pennsylvania. And, you know, Stephanie was on the show and we came up with that term, and we're going to call it what it is. And it's the state sanctioned murder of innocent children. You know, no more of this pussyfooting around on these issues anymore. And I think to Gary's point is that we have to be in this fight 24/7. We can't just be, well, when the election rolls around, you know, we have to be united in what we're trying to do here.
Yeah. Don, one other word that I've rejected is pro-choice. These people hate choice. they don't want primaries. They don't want Trump on the ballot. They don't want choice in anything. They're certainly not pro-choice when it comes to abortion. They are pro-abortion at best, and as I typically call them, they are abortion enthusiasts. And there's a video of Martha Plimpton speaking to an audience in Seattle, Tacoma area several years ago, talking about how she had her first abortion there and how it was her best one. And the crowd goes absolutely berserk, clapping and cheering and applauding. That's not pro-choice. Those are abortion enthusiasts. They want to maximize the number of abortions executed every year. And we have to not accept their language, but rather use more accurate language and language that we choose to describe them and us.
Go ahead, Tim. I know you wanted to jump in on here.
Well, I totally agree with Gary. You know, we Christians, Americans, we have our faith in God and we have our involvement in politics and in the governmental realm. And for those who don't, this is their religion. And so they live it every day, 7 days a week, 24 hours a day. And they're for those who, and I've often looked at this in this way. For those who love God, serve him, and stand for righteousness, there is spiritual opposition. The powers of darkness push back.
Yes.
For those who do not, there is no spiritual opposition. It's a free-willing runway, so to speak. So I agree with Gary, and I agree with you. And how you couch this and communicate this is about the death of a human being. The death of a created being, a being created by God. And it must be understood that way and not nuanced in such a way that it doesn't offend or is more palatable or easy on the ear. So I commend you all for that. And I thank you. And Gary, I thank you for your involvement in Ohio. I, too, spoke to a lot of people who said, I didn't realize, I didn't know. And, you know, we're working 24/7. To talk, to communicate to churches, to work through the pastors, to get the information in the hands of believers. But that's not everybody. Not everybody goes to church, and not everybody's influenced by the church. And the messaging we had was, what we did have out there was good and true, but it was incredibly overwhelmed. To Gary's point, they had as much money as they needed. And if they needed more, they could have gotten more. And so the command of communication. And so when you do not have a biblical worldview and you don't understand history or civics, you're easily persuaded in the other direction. And many remorsefully have communicated with me post-election, realizing what they had voted for. So,
and isn't Tim, quite honestly, though, what we're talking about here is why they have decided to attack religion so much and try to make us a secular society. Because if you don't have the biblical worldview that we're talking about, you're easily manipulated by words or to be non-offended, if you want to talk, you know, in a nice way. You know, you're easily steered in a direction that, oh, well, that's less offensive. So, you know, we can say that. I mean, what we're talking about here is the fundamental. I mean, right now, what they've done is they have basically neutered a parent's right to raise their child.
Yeah, absolutely. This is a Pandora's box. And Gary, you alluded to this. This is far and beyond this. The wording is so vague in this amendment that the door is open to things perhaps we haven't even considered yet. But it all allows for anything and everything a carnal heart can dream up, if you will. And so the reason is, look, right, we're the only thing that stands in the way of them doing everything they want. We're in the way. And so this is to remove the only thing that stands between righteousness and unrighteousness, truth and error and good and evil. So this is a moment where, though we have suffered great defeat here in Ohio, the only reason we can be hopeful, by the way, is because of the message of Christmas. And that's the only thing that gives us hope in a moment like this, because it means we need help from beyond our ability. God's help. Well, that's how we were founded as a nation, and that's how we'll remain a nation if it's to happen that way.
And there's no doubt that what you just said is true, but we also need help from our fellow Americans. We need more people to realize the depth and breadth of the assault on their nation and their rights. And it seems that so many think, listen, I can approve of this vote carelessly and not pay attention to it because nothing's going to change. The United States will always be this free, prosperous society. I'll always be safe and secure. And it's simply not true. And we see more and more evidence of that all the time. But until people who care about their families and care about their community and care about their nation begin to either donate money or time, invest money or time in fights like the issue one fight in Ohio, we will not win. We need more people to get off the couch. If you think about it, the initial pledge, I think, from the you know, leftists, let's call them, on issue one was for, I think, a little bit more than $50 million. They got it done for $35. That represents a savings to them, right? They did this. They're going to look at this and say, hey, great outcome, efficient use of capital. It's hard to imagine that that's the outcome for them. And of course, on the other side, people are saying, I don't know what to do. I don't know how to get involved. I don't know how to take action. Or worse yet, it won't happen to my family, whatever the issue might be. But when one of your family members gets taken down by this fentanyl scourge, this chemical weapon, when one of your family members is carjacked by gang members from Sinaloa or Zeta or from Gulf or Jalisco, or you know, when it begins to penetrate your world, then all of a sudden people say, well, gee, what can I do? Well, guess what? It's too late. So somehow we need to provide people with the information and the vehicles for them to actually engage and invest their time and money in this fight. Because if we don't, then the only voices that will be heard are the voices that won in Ohio. And to be clear on this issue one, you're right. It's a giant hole now in the middle of the Constitution that could be interpreted any way the leftists will wish it to be interpreted. That happened in the state with a Republican governor and a Republican House and a Republican Senate, complete Republican control of that state. It's considered now to be a red state, and yet this happened. And to remove a constitutional amendment is virtually impossible. It's never going to happen. So now this is perpetually locked into the Constitution of the state of Ohio to be interpreted as the left decides. It'll be litigated from here until the end of time to expand the interpretation, to enforce a broader interpretation, to take away more rights from parents. And when these demons get a hold of your child and you see what they do once they start with the injections and with the, not, you know, the surgeries, it's going to be, this is a serious fight for the families of Ohio, but we simply have to have more of the sort of average, somewhat sleepy citizen get off the couch and start to invest in this battle, or we won't win.
Well, let me tell you, I've got some good news, and that is that folks can go to communityimpact.frc.org, and that's an avenue of involvement for churches locally. We've got thousands of community impact teams in America, and that's an avenue of training, an avenue of learning, equipping and understanding how to get involved. So I encourage people to go communityimpact.frc.org.
Yeah, and the other thing too, Tim. So with tomorrow being Saturday, what's tomorrow's coffee in a column going to be? Because if you guys are not watching Mr. Tim Throckmorton on Saturday mornings, he does his coffee in a column. So for the Christmas season, sir, what are we going to be talking about tomorrow?
Well, that's a byproduct of my weekly newspaper column, and I read it each Saturday morning. It's entitled, this week is The Reach of Christmas. So, tune in. Around 9 a.m. Eastern Standard Time, join me for coffee and a column.
It's a great. I share it with everybody. So I find it extremely informative. Because you know, you mentioned earlier when you were speaking about that, the way we're going to turn this around is getting more, and I'll use the same term you did, disciples, people that are going to start looking at things from a biblical worldview. That's the only way we're going to turn this corner. And we have to use every avenue of that we have. And this coffee in a column is one of the many ways. This show is another way. Because, you know, we say what needs to be said.
Yeah. And it's you know, this is the long game. They've been playing a long game for a long time, as Gary alluded. They've been working hard for a long time. This is our long game, and by the way, it's biblical. This is Jesus' mandate for us to build the church. And when the church is engaged, and you know, you're not easily persuaded by fake news when you have a biblical worldview. You know, you see it for what it is, and it stands out, and so you respond correctly, or and you understand you're to be engaged in this culture, not just a observer of it. And so teaching the Bible, teaching history, teaching civics, it's not a bad thing for the future of a country. And I appreciate so much this program and its hard work in making a difference on the airways.
Well, Tim, one of the things that you do with the Family Research Council is you go around to different areas and you help not only bring the message to people, but one of the things that we've done with you jointly is you will come in and you will teach pastors how they can talk about politics in their church without endangering their 501(c) status. And I think that's an important aspect, because when this country was founded, a lot of the activists, and I'll use that word, you know, or as we see, Gary and I are trying to change the terminology. So we consider ourselves now the moderates, because we believe in the Constitution and we believe in God. And we're not the extremists. We're the moderates. It's the others are the extremists. OK, so I want people to understand that when this country was founded, the pastors had a definite impact and were active in bringing this country to what it is. And I think that's one of the things that you and the Family Research Council are trying to bring back. And so let's talk about that a little bit, because I think it's important.
Well, you know, it's funny. My good friend, former Congressman Bob McEwen, when he gives tours of the House chamber in the nation's capital, he'll take you in. He'll say, well, the Democrats sit here and the Americans sit over here. And so I like to use that term, American, because it means something. It meant something to George Washington when, you know, they were getting ready to attack Trenton. They posted, he said, post only Americans tonight on duty. And the reason he said that was because it's more than just signing up or being here physically. It's about an understanding of who we are and where we came from. This is we're a byproduct of a biblical influence from the very, very beginning, from those who came to these shores, from those who began. Think about John Hancock and Sam Adams circulating sermons by John Wise from the 1600s. They did that in a book form early in the 1700s, and all the churches, which was where people went then. So we did command a colonies wide influence then, as the pastors begin to preach and talk about biblical involvement, a biblical worldview perspective on what's happening, the interaction with England. And then they were talking about what they were called to do, talking about liberty and freedom, God-given freedom, and how this they begin to found these colonies and write constitutions. They did that from a biblical worldview perspective. And I love to talk about
John Locke's Two Treaties of Government. It's a little 400-page book. He was a political philosopher. The founders read him. They employed his principles of governance. And in 400 pages, the scriptures are referred to 1,500 times. And over, there's instance and story as pastors preached and taught and involved, and they signed up and they served. Peter Gabriel Muhlenberg over in Virginia, 300 of his men formed the Virginia 8th and fought alongside General Washington. And this is who we are and where we came from. And so understanding that is imperative. In fact, something happens that is phenomenal, Don. Around the country, I was in 27 states this year. I spoke hundreds of times to pastors and church leaders. And as you begin to weave in our biblical history in America, to believers, there is a moment where dots are connected and they begin to say, oh, that's who we are. That's how we're supposed to respond and how we're supposed to engage. It's kind of like the revival in Josiah's day when they read the scriptures and they said, oh, this is who our God is. This is where we came from. This is how we're supposed to live. And it really inspires many. And what happens then is churches begin to get involved and they begin to influence their local area, school boards, county commissioners. That's where a lot of that's an entryway. That's a beginning point for many people into politics. They're in the House of Representatives or they're serving in the State House because they got involved locally. And as the more people with a biblical worldview we insert into that pipeline, if you will, and the more who teach and train their children and grandchildren, there is a move afoot. More people are engaged now than I have ever seen, Don. And I've been really involved in this since 2004. But I'm watching at a ground level movement around the country. There are thousands and thousands of groups that are influencing their communities, and that's going to have a lasting impact. It may not turn every election the way we want, but we must train up a new generation and stay as involved as Gary was alluding to there, and make the difference we can while we can.
Well, so one of the things that I think it's important to realize is that this fallacy that they push of this separation of church and state. Okay, first of all, there's no such thing in the Constitution. It's a separation of church and state. So, but they have instilled this fear, if you want to use, and that's what it is, into some of these pastors that they can no longer have a political opinion. And if you take a biblical worldview and are able to explain that to people, that's not politics, that's a biblical view of the situation. And so again, you're one of the things that, and I've been to a few of the seminars that you do, you lay it out step by step of what a pastor can and cannot do. And it's amazing. The first time I went, I found it amazing how I've been brainwashed all these years, and now I understand of what a pastor or a leader of a church can do and still stay within quote-unquote man's law. They can speak about God's law and stay within man's law.
Well, yeah, that if you don't know, if you got millions of people who don't know American history, then they'll believe anything. Look, you're right. It wasn't in the Constitution. It was in a letter that Thomas Jefferson wrote to a group over. I was just in Connecticut last week, and I'd have gone to Danbury because that's where they were. That's who he wrote the letter to, and he was just talking about this wall of separation that kept the government out of the church, not the church out of the government. And so that has been remessaged or repackaged to say the opposite. And again, if you don't know the truth, you're going to believe anything. And that's what many believe. But I also, there's another component here. I agree with you that there are many pastors and churches in America who don't want to get involved because they're afraid of losing their 501c3 status. And no church has ever lost that, by
the
way.
Yes, exactly right.
I even preached a a partisan. I endorsed a candidate from the pulpit and mailed my sermon to the IRS years ago, and they never did a thing. And so you can't believe that. What also is a piece of this, Gary, Don, is that there are many pastors, a big percentage of pastors in America, you know, who have been trained not to talk about it for not just that reason, but other reasons as well. You're only supposed to talk about the gospel or the Bible, and you're not supposed to do anything else. And they see this happening around them. And by the way, I Gary pointed out something. When it happens to your family, whoa, it's a different story. So when it begins to touch you, you begin to think differently about these things. But for many pastors, it hasn't touched them. It may be touching their congregation, but it's not touching them yet. And they aren't hurting at this point. And they don't, here's the key. They don't know what to say. And so they say nothing. And in saying nothing, for people sitting in the pews, everybody gets their news and information somewhere. If the pastor doesn't talk about it, well, they'll find the information. Wow, what's this transgender stuff? Well, pastor doesn't mention it. It must not be in the Bible. I'll Google it. And then you get into trouble. So many people don't know what to say, so they say nothing. And silence is often seen as an endorsement.
Yes.
That's a danger. The fear is, the fear of many pastors, I don't know what to say. I just don't know how to, I don't know how to deal with this. So this is where we can help. The Family Research Council, we produce real time, every day, resources that help leaders, speakers, teachers, pastors, denominational leaders speak biblically to cultural issues. And we can add value to leaders around the country if they will allow us to.
And I think you got it.
What you're talking about is really important. And we have discussions with citizens all the time. We do a lot of different programs where we're out talking to folks face-to-face. And we frequently get people saying to us, we just don't know what we can say in response to what I call the screeching harpies. And, you know, we all know who these folks are. They're sitting in the back pew waiting to pounce on a pastor that says something that they don't like, or they're at your Thanksgiving dinner table waiting to call you the crazy uncle or the crazy sibling, right? And they're radicalized leftists, and they're very well programmed because they simply watch CNN, ABC, CBS, and then listen to NPR, and they know exactly the talking points. They probably don't know anything behind the talking points, but they're religiously dedicated to their talking points. And this is a religion, right? The wokest religion is a religion. That's how we see it being rolled out in the schools so aggressively. It would have been unthinkable probably just 10 years ago to say, we're going to put child pornography in elementary and middle schools. And yet it's out in probably the majority of schools now today in America. And if you call it out, they say you're a bigot. Well, there's nothing bigoted about not wanting child pornography in a school, but our folks are hesitant to respond. They don't want to be called names. You know, the enemy uses the rules of radicals, rules for radicals, that book by Saul Alinsky, dedicated to Satan. They use that as a manual just to manage us. And I'm just wondering how many of these pastors are really afraid as well of the screeching harpy in the back pew who's just waiting for a chance to unleash her MSNBC training on them.
That's good. And so they're afraid because they don't know how to respond. And if you know how to respond when those screeches begin, I love that. I just smile big because this is going to be fun. The truth.
Yeah, me too.
You know it.
Now you're playing in my ball field, right? Now
you
you're
go.
On my court.
But,
yeah, but I love
it. If a pastor doesn't know what to say, then he's gonna. You're right. He's gonna back up from that. That's the fear, not knowing what to say, but afraid of being confronted. And but the good news is the truth is out there, and if you just know the truth, know our history, and understand how government works, goodness. And you have a biblical worldview perspective, then you're ready to have meaningful, in-depth conversations. And there's this, Gary, I'm just getting to know you here, but I like you already. There's this lost art of rejecting a premise. Nobody knows how to do that anymore. So
no.
The talking points set the stage for an argument that isn't winnable if the premise is wrong. So you have to be able to take that apart and speak biblically in this moment the truth. And it may not change their mind, but you'll have the confidence and courage to say something. And that's what we need in the hearts of these great leaders in churches in America.
And, you know, the thing that really brought it to the forefront was during COVID, how so few pastors pushed back when the state said they couldn't have their congregations get together. Now we had one here, like in the Lansdale area, where he, you know, said, "I don't care what you say, we're having our thing." Even when the state police came and said, you know, and he just said, you know, "You can't do this," you know. But a lot of them, like you said, Tim, they didn't know what to say. They didn't know how to respond. So instead of pushing back, they just didn't do anything. And, you know, when you have, you know, people taking license plate numbers down parked in the church parking lot, you know, and, yeah, and that, you know, that just goes into this whole totalitarian system that the state was pushing during COVID. And I think that I would have liked to have seen more pastors stand up to that. Some did, but I think you hit on the actual problem, is that they don't know what to say, so they say nothing. And silence is acceptance.
And they're afraid. Yeah. You cannot lead from fear. You cannot lead from fear.
Let me encourage, you know, I pointed you to the community impact site, the communityimpact.frc.org. FRC.org is our main page, and you can go there, search issues, and just look to your heart's content. We have a daily newspaper now called The Washington Stand, and that's a real-time biblical worldview perspective on what's happening. We also have Tony's radio and television show every day. It's on around 900 stations, Washington Watch, and we invite folks to check it out. We're creating every day resources, white papers, pamphlets, tools, videos, on and on, to speak biblically to what's happening in culture. So I encourage folks to check it out. We're a trusted resource, and so stop by.
Yeah, and the other thing too is, I don't want to be remiss here. A good friend of ours, Tim, who you've steered my way many times, Kurt Weaver from the PA Family Institute. Also, they have here in Pennsylvania, they have plenty of resources as well. We've done joint ventures with them as well. Together, I think we can do this. I really do. Yeah. I'm not going to roll over. I know. Mr. Throckmorton is not going to roll over, and I sure as heck know Gary's not rolling over. So,
right. I think there are two images that really encapsulate what we're talking about today. And Tim, I don't know what area you spend most of your time in, but Ohio, I assume Michigan a little bit. And on the Michigan State House grounds, they erected a small and ugly Baphomet sculpture or statue. And a young woman, a Democrat staffer, photographed herself kissing the statue and said, "In the name of Satan, I claim the sexy satanic Baphomet goat altar at our Michigan Capitol. Amen." And she kisses it. Now, this is a woman who's so deeply, deeply in trouble that, you know, I look at this and I feel bad for her, because I recognize that while she thinks she's putting out something that's proud, she later deleted the tweet, something she's proud of. In fact, what this woman's dealing with, the demons in her have got to be nightmarish. The other image, you may remember, speaking of pastors and courage, up in Canada, there was a pastor of Polish descent. I think he was actually an immigrant from Poland. So he knew what it was like to live under the Soviet, the leftist, the totalitarian state. And he sees that rolling out in Canada. And the image, so the police broke into his church on Easter, tried to stop him from holding an Easter service. He refused, screamed at them, and drove them out of his church. And then they arrested him. And you may remember the image of him on his knees, hands cuffed behind his back, surrounded by a phalanx of police vehicles with lights going on in the rain. And he was absolutely fearless in his willingness to be arrested and have them take him in. He was fearless in kneeling on that road while, you know, the enemy's agents worked around him and came to get him and took him away. And that's the two images. One, a fearless warrior who's willing to take the risks and the repercussions of his battle. And the other, this victim, as I see her, who's been captured by this woke religion, this satanic force, who's on the state grounds taking a picture of herself to tell the world that she embraces Satan. You know, I think we probably, you know, in your communities, you obviously have a huge community of people who are praying frequently. I suspect it's a good idea to pray for both. One, for the pastor to keep his courage going, and the other to somehow get to this girl.
Well said. Well said, Gary. I appreciate those two images. And I know that God has many who are seeing what's happening, and they're just looking for help, direction. What do I do next? In fact, that's the number one question I get around the country. What do I do? What can I do? And I think that's representative of millions of Americans. And once they hear what they can do, I think back to the Americans. They'll do the right thing.
Well, Tim, you know, before we run out of time, I'd like to give you a moment to give your Christmas message to the listeners. What would you like to say in the last couple minutes we have on the air?
Well, thank you for allowing me to be here, and I appreciate Gary and his insight as well. Several years ago, there was a story about a young couple who were planning to have their little baby christened in their beautiful home. It was a cold, wintry day, and as guests began to arrive, they were greeted by the husband and wife. The couples entered, tossed their coats and scarves on the bed that was adjacent to the living area. Everybody is there, and after a brief time of fellowship, somebody said, "Where's the baby?" And the mother quickly dashed into the bedroom, discovered that the coats and scarves had been thrown on the bed where she'd placed the baby. And so the child almost smothers at his own party, and that seems like that's the byproduct of the over commercialization, if you will, of Christmas and all that's happening. You know, I like the Grinch, and I like the 1966 version of the Grinch with Boris Karloff, where, you know, there's this redemption piece at the end where it dawns on the Grinch, perhaps Christmas means a little bit more.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it's true that it did. And it does. It means that God so loved the world that he gave his only begotten son. And he did it for you and he did it for me. And that's the message. That's the timeless message that, again, warms our hearts this year. Merry Christmas.
Well, thank you, Tim. And I'm glad you came on the show today. We'll have you again. And when you're able to come out here, we'll get something set up for you to come out, and we'll do something. So thank you again. And again, tune in on Saturday mornings at 9 a.m. on Facebook for Tim's Coffee and a Column. It's a great thing. Go to frc.org so you can find out more information on how the Family Research Council can help you in this fight as we go forward. I want, for myself and Gary and for Pastor Tim Throckmorton, I want to wish everybody a very Merry Christmas. Enjoy your family. Go to church and say thank you, Jesus, for saving the world. Have a blessed Christmas, everybody. You've been listening to The Conservative Voice here on WWDB 860 AM. Thank you very much.
First Responders Children's Foundation takes care of the children and families the brave ones leave at home. Help us help them. These are the beautiful voices of police officers, firefighters, nurses, and teenagers who remind us that we can come together and create harmony and unity. Text BRAVE to 24365 to learn how you can help your first responder community today.
Hi, Grandma. Can Nina come over for dinner?
Sure. I've been meaning to ask you, what would happen if someone offered you a drink?
Grandma!
If anyone ever does, I want you to say, no, I have too much respect for my family and I don't want to get in trouble.
I promise, Grandma.
They really do hear you. For tips on what to say, visit underagedrinking.samhsa.gov. That's underagedrinking.samhsa.gov. This message brought to you by SAMHSA and this station.